Very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 20th of January, 2022. It's a Thursday class. So we'll be continuing our sharing from this book, The Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. We are at page 153. Just relax body and mind and maintain some form of attention, a stable posture, so that you can proceed with our half an hour awareness-based meditation. So we are off the light, then you can have your half an hour of awareness-based meditation. Just relax completely, body and mind, and silence everything. You just relax body and mind, maintain awareness, then silent everything. Don't try to know. Don't try to do anything. Just maintain awareness. Aware, finish. Aware, finish. If you do that, your mind will not think. The mind will just relax and settle down, so that your original mind, the true mind, the silent mind, will manifest. Without thought, that true mind will manifest. Then you will be able to be with the awareness nature within, completely silent, tranquil, still. That is your meditative mind. Stabilize that and use that to meditate, to develop understanding of who you are, what you are, and how you function as a human being. How your senses, physical senses, together with the brain and your consciousness trapped inside function, how it creates consciousness, and how the mundane mind input the content of consciousness to trigger off the thought process, and all your emotion, how they come to be. They are conditioned by your views, opinion, and conditioning. So with this understanding, I will let you meditate on your own. So I will read the paragraph that we stop at. They have exhausted the bonds of all existence, and their hearts had attained self-mastery. You see, exhausted means non-existent. What is non-existent? There are three rhymes of existence, which further divides into 25 planes of existence. The three rhymes of existence are the existence in the desire rhyme, or they call Kamaloka, sensual rhyme. Then there is this existence in the form rhyme, which is Rupaloka. Then finally, there is this existence in the formless rhyme. They call it the Arupa Loka. So this refers to the Arahants and beyond, who have severed all bonds, means they have rooted out the 10 fetters, including ignorance. So they will not be bound by samsara or the wheel of life. They have liberated. So there is no more rebirth through the usual ignorant way, that condition rebirth. So they will be able to free their mind from taking rebirth within the three rhymes of existence. We have the sensual rhyme, Kamaloka. Then the form rhyme, Rupaloka, followed by the formless rhyme, Arupaloka. Then it can also be divided into 25 planes of existence, include the four continents and the four evil destiny, which are as follow. The four continents are Puva, Vediha in the east, Jambuvaipi in the south. So this Jambu Vipa in the south is referring to our world system. Then they have the Apara Godaniya in the west and the Uttara Kura in the north. The four evil destiny are the four willful states, the hell realm, the powerful hungry ghosts, the powerful animals, and the powerful asuras. So that makes eight planes of existence. Then come into existence through the creation of karma. Especially evil karma. I read from the text better. Especially evil karma. At the six desire realm and the Brahma heaven. And that makes 15. Yeah? So 8 plus 6 plus 1, 15. Then come the heavens of the four dhyans. Yeah. Some people who don't understand the Buddha Dharma think arriving at the level of the fourth dhyan is an extraordinary accomplishment. Actually, it's still within the 25 planes of the three realms and it's nothing special. The ultimate goal of cultivation is still far off. But a confused teacher may tell everyone that it is the highest level of attainment. For example, there was an unlearned bhikkhu who mistook the four dhyan for the fourth stage of arahantship. When he had exhausted the merits that had enabled him to dwell there and began to fall, he slandered the Buddha. The Buddha said that those who reach the fourth fruit do not undergo birth and death. How come I am falling? Having slandered the Buddha, he fell eternally into the four evil destiny. The unlearned bhikkhu did not fall alone. Several tens of thousands of his disciples also fall with him. So as I have said repeatedly, one confused transmission transmit the confusion. In one transmission, two misunderstood. The teacher plummeted into hell. His disciple followed right behind. So this is a very famous quote by Master Xuan Hua. The teacher asked his disciple, "What are you doing here?" "You came, so of course we follow you," is the reply. The teacher thinks, "How did I manage to bring my disciple to hell? He himself doesn't know how it happened." The disciple was so fond of the teacher that they even follow him to hell. How pathetic. The four stations of emptiness are the stations of boundless space, boundless consciousness, boundless station of nothingness, whatever, in the station of neither perception nor non-perception. The four dhyan and the four station of emptiness are eight planes of existing. Adding the no thought heaven and the heaven of no return, counted as one, makes 10. So these 10 planes plus the 15 plane above make 25 plane in all. So this is the Mahayana way of actually breaking down into the planes of existence. But under Theravada, they have 31 planes of existence. So if you are of the Theravada tradition, it is the same, except of the manner in which Mahayana subdivided them is slightly different. The 31 plane of existence come from the four willful state plus the human realm, so five. Then you have the six Brahma realm, Deva realms. So six plus five is 11. Then you have the 16 Brahma realm, makes 27. Then the four Arupa realm, formless realm. Total 31 plane. Yeah. The Arahats present in the assembly had cast off the bonds of all existence and transcended the three realms. That's why transcending the three rhyme is what enlightenment is all about. The rhyme of sensual desire, the rhyme of form, and the formless rhyme. So it is said they have transcended the three rhymes. And were not within the five elements. They have gained liberation, genuine liberation from birth and death. They have cast off the bond of all existence, and their heart has attained self-mastery. The heart of the great arahants then knew a boundless joy. Self-mastery is true happiness. There is nothing more comfortable and more joyful. So Avalokiteshvara is called the bodhisattvas who contemplate with self-mastery, which means that the bodhisattva sits in meditation and is always very happy, extremely comfortable, and knows not even the slightest trace of deception. Self-mastery refers to having no further affliction, having attained self-benefit, and having cast off all the bonds of existence. In this state, the heart is obtained truly. In this state, the heart has obtained true freedom and genuine wisdom. One is therefore extremely happy. This kind of happiness is a true inner happiness. It is not an artificial emotional display of giggle and laughter. It is an inner joy, inner happiness, not an outside one. Don't think that your laughing and joking is happiness. It is really just upside down affliction. Why is it upside down? It shows that because you have no samadhi power, you are influenced by some situation that pleases you and you respond with laughter. There is no real happiness in that. That's just been upside down. So this is the commentaries from Master Xuan Hong. Then we move on to the suttas, the Lotus Sutta. Their names were Ashnata Kondanya, Maha Kasapa, Uru Viva Kasapa, Gaya Kasapa, Nadi Kasapa, Shariputta, Great Mongalana, Maha Kayayana, Anuruddha, Kapina, Gavampati, Revata, Pilindavata, Pilindavasa, Vakula, Mahaka, Kastila, Nanda, Sundara, Nanda, Punya, Maitriyani, Putra, Subhati, Ananda, and Rahula, and other great arahats such as this, whom the assembly knew and recognized. Then we go to commentary. Above have been listed the names of 21 disciples who were among the 12,000 bhikkhu present in the assembly. Their names were Ajnata Kondanya was the first person whom the Buddha took across. He was one of the five ascetics that followed the Buddha. Sakyamuni Buddha sat beneath the Bodhi tree, and one night he saw the bright star and awakened to the world, the way. Having become enlightened, he contemplated to see whom he should cross over first. There are so many people in the world, he thought. Whom should I save first? When the Buddha first accomplished the way, he sighed and said three times, strange indeed, strange indeed, strange indeed. What was so strange? He continued. All living beings have the Buddha nature. All can become Buddhas. The Buddha only said that all beings can become Buddhas. He did not say that they actually were Buddhas. But Buddhist disciple, or rather pseudo-Buddhist disciple, says everyone is a Buddha. They see no difference between ordinary people and the Buddha. This is the case of the blind leading the blind and blinding the eyes of humans and God. After Shakyamuni Buddha shouted 3 times, he used the wonderful observing wisdom to determine who he should save first. Ah, he concluded, Anyata Kundanya and the 4 others are now at the deer park. I should cross them over first. In past life, these 5 people had exclusively concentrated on trying to ruin Shakyamuni Buddha. Limitless eons ago, when they all decided to cultivate the way, the 5 of them had slandered and bullied Shakyamuni Buddha. Sometimes they beat him, other times they berated him. Sometimes they ate his flesh, other times they drank his blood. Violent, weren't they? But while he was cultivating on the coastal ground, when the 5 beat him, he made the following vow. You are all truly aiding me in my cultivation. In the future, when I realize Buddhahood, I will certainly save you first. That is my vow. Because you are treating me badly now, I shall be especially good to you. When they scolded Shakyamuni Buddha, he said, you scold me now, but I do not hate you. Not only do I not hate you, but I vow that when I become a Buddha, I will save you first. If it had been us, we would surely have hit them or kicked them right back. But not only did Shakyamuni Buddha to be not defend himself, he resolved to be good to them. Once the 5 of them got together in the small mob and approached him saying, we have no meal to eat. You are such a cultivator. Do you think you should give us a little piece of your flesh? Sure enough, Shakyamuni Buddha cut off a clean, lean piece of flesh for them. As they ate it, they muttered. This meat is no good at all. Dog meat tastes better than this, to say nothing of pork, beef, and mutton. It's tasteless. Your offering is not being relished. Still, they ate it. So they even scolded him for eating his flesh. Shakyamuni Buddha had thought that by offering them his flesh, they might be moved to shame and reform their conduct. Who would have thought that they would on the one hand eat his flesh and on the other hand scold him? This would have been the last straw for most people. I didn't buy this in the meat market, they would have said. I cut it off my own body, and you have the nerve to scold me. But Shakyamuni Buddha just said, okay, you can eat my meat or flesh. And in the future, when I succeed in my cultivation and become a Buddha, I will take you across first. Because this flesh I have given you to eat is the Buddha's seed, which I am planting in each of you. The same thing happened when they drank Shakyamuni Buddha's blood. They say it was spoiled, bad blood, and Shakyamuni Buddha just endured it. The most moving story about that is about his encounter with King Kali. The story is mentioned in the Vajra Sutta. King Kali was a former incarnation of Ajnata Kundanya. Once he went to the mountain on a big game hunting expedition, he took along his concubines who had been confined to the palace as if in jail for many years. Now they frolicked in the wide open space of nature, exploring the lush meander and wood and flowing stream. and the beautiful mountains surrounding. Suddenly, they spotted a man sitting in a cave. His body was covered with a thick layer of dust, and his hair was matted into a big lump. The concubine didn't dare approach him at first. They thought he was a monster. But then they saw that he was just a strange person. As a cultivator on the coastal ground, Sakyamuni Buddha was practicing as this patient immortal, and rarely saw anybody or anyone. When he saw the concubine, he decided to take them across. "Don't be afraid," he said. "I won't eat you. I don't eat people. I'm a person myself, indeed." The concubine said, "What are you doing here? What do you eat? And why are your clothes so tattered? Can you walk? Why do you sit there?" The patient immortal said, "I'm cultivating the way. I exclusively cultivate the virtue of patience." The concubine said, "What is patience?" They had no idea what it is or what it was. The patient immortal said, "Patience means that no matter how impolite people are to you, you do not get angry or upset. Everything continues just as if nothing had happened." And then he explained the method of cultivation, or cultivating patience. As he spoke, his enthusiasm grew, and the concubine, who had never heard such wonderful Dhamma, was enthralled. Soon the speaker and the listener all had entered Samadhi and were oblivious to what was going on around them. If one listened to the Dhamma with a true heart, one will not notice anything else that is going on. If one does not listen with a true heart, one will be distracted by every sound on the street, the tourists, the newspaper, vendors, and so on. The patient immortal and his audience were completely absorbed in the practice of patience. When along came King Kali, sneaking up on the scene, he saw his concubine listening intently to the cultivator, and he was immediately overcome with jealousy. "Just what do you think you are doing, seducing my woman?" he screamed at the cultivator. The patient immortal looked to see who was speaking, and recognized that an emperor had come on the scene, and said, "I am teaching them the Dhammada of patience." "Oh, really?" said the king. "Patience, huh? What exactly do you mean by that way? Are you patient?" "Yes, I am," said the immortal. "Very well," said the king. "I will just give your patience a little test. If you are patient, that means you can endure any kind of pain, doesn't it?" "Yes," said Sakyamuni Buddha. "Well, I'm going to slice your hands off with my sword and see how patient you are," said the king. "Go ahead," said Sakyamuni. The king then draw his royal sword and with one neat slice off Sakyamuni Buddha's hand. "Does it hurt?" asked the king. "No," said Sakyamuni Buddha. "Are you angry?" asked the king. "I'm not angry," said the Buddha. "All right, I will cut off the other hand and see what you do." And he cut off the other hand. "Now, does that hurt?" he asked. Sakyamuni Buddha said, "No, it does not hurt." "Do you hate me?" the king asked. "I do not hate you," said Sakyamuni Buddha. "I don't believe you. I think you are lying," said the king. "How could you possibly not hate someone who had cut off both your hands? It's impossible. I will cut off your foot and see if that makes you hate me. I will get the truth out of you yet." He said while cutting off the cultivator Shakyamuni Buddha's foot. Ordinary people would certainly have been weeping in agony by this time, but Shakyamuni Buddha remained as if nothing had happened. The king asked, "Does it hurt?" "No," said Sakyamuni Buddha. "It's really nothing." "And it's nothing, huh? Do you hate me?" "No, I don't hate you." All right then, you are missing two hands and one foot. The other foot isn't much use to you. Oh, patient one, who knows no pain. So we will just chop it off. And he sliced off Sakyamuni Buddha's other foot. Hurt, doesn't it? Said the king. You have lost both your hands and feet. What are you going to do now? Tell the truth. Does it hurt? If you tell the truth, we will forget it. If you don't tell the truth, I have got yet another test in store. Sakyamuni Buddha said, it still doesn't hurt. Do you hate me? No. The king said, that's just what you say. You don't dare admit that you hate me because I'm the king. No matter how much it hurt, you continue to lie because you don't dare to tell the truth, right? Wrong, says Sakyamuni Buddha. And if I truly don't hate you, my hand and limbs will grow back on my body. If I do hate you, my hands and limbs won't grow back. As soon as he said that, immediately his hands and feet grew back as if they have never been severed. Then all the Dhamma protectors and good spirit flew into a rage and sent down a great hailstorm which pounded King Kali unmercifully. Sakyamuni Buddha interceded on the king's behalf, saying, don't blame him. He just came to test me and aid me in the accomplishment of the way. In the future, when I become the Buddha, he will be the first person I'm going to take across to Buddhahood. He shall be the first to be enlightened. In fact, King Kali in the later life became the bhikkhu Ajnata Kondanya, the first person Shakyamuni Buddha caused to become enlightened. Therefore, Ajnata Kondanya's name means understanding the original limit. It also means the first to be liberated, and he was the first to become enlightened. Then the next one is Mahakasapa. Maha here means great. Kasapa, his family name, means drinking light or wave of lights. It also means great turtle clan. For it was said that when his ancestor was cultivating the way, they saw a big turtle with a chart on his back, and from this took their family name. The Chinese would consider the name turtle to be an insult, but Kasapa's name nevertheless means big turtle. Kasapa's personal name was Pipala, which is the name of the tree to which his parents prayed to in order to have their son. Drinking light doesn't mean that he actually drank light. Of course, it refers to the fact that Kasapa's body emitted a light which outshone and seemed to drink up all other lights. Where did the light come from? Kasapa's wife also left the home life and became the bhikkhuni purple golden light. Long ago, after the Nirvana of Vipassana Buddha, she was a poor woman. One day she came across the ruin of a temple and stupa. Inside she saw a Buddha image. Someone had put a straw hat on it to protect it from the wind and rain. In the springtime in northern China where I came from, the woman in the household weave these straw hats and sell them in the city. Anyway, the straw hat acted like an umbrella to protect the Buddha from the wind and the rain, which blew in through the holes in the roof, but still it was badly weathered, cracked, and peeling. She compassionately resolved to repair the temple and regild the image. How can I allow the Buddha to be battered by the wind and the rain? Since she was poor, she went out begging to raise a fund for her project. Every day she took the money she had collected and exchanged it for gold. After about 10 years of begging, she had accumulated quite a bit of gold and made arrangements to have the temple rebuilt. She also went to visit a goldsmith to see about having her gold refined to rebuild the image. The goldsmith asked her where she got so much gold. "I saw a Buddha image which was cracked and peeling," he said, "and I begged for 10 years to get enough money to buy this gold in order to repay it." The goldsmith said, "You should share this merit and virtue. I will help you too." He was so struck by her goodness in wanting to repair the Buddha image that he fell in love with her and wanted her to think well of him. When the image and the temple had been restored, the goldsmith asked the woman for her hand in marriage. "You are truly a good-hearted woman. You are the finest woman I have ever met. I had intended to remain unmarried, but now I had changed my mind. Won't you marry me?" The woman thought it over. He isn't a bad sort himself. After all, he did only charge me half the usual fee to rebuild the image. And she consented. Once they were married, they vowed to be husband and wife in every life. How powerful was their love, because they have rebuilt the Buddha image. Their body shone with the golden light. Thus Kassapa's name means drinking light, because his light swallowed up all other lights. From the time of his birth, Kassapa's body put forward golden light. When he grew up, his parents wanted him to marry, but he said, "The woman I marry must shine with golden light just like I do. Otherwise, I will not marry." Sure enough, in the neighboring country, such a woman was found, and they were married. And when they certified to the fruit of Aurangzeb, they discovered that they had been married to each other throughout many lifetimes. You shouldn't make a mistake, however, and think to imitate them by making a vow to be married to someone for life after life. Kassapa and his wife vowed to be married and then to cultivate the way, to take refuge in the triple gem, to live the home life, the master way, and master the way. Don't just make a vow to be married to someone in every life. If you do, you will get further and further off the track until you finally end up in hell. You must cultivate the way. Kassapa and his wife took refuge in the Buddha and certified to the fruit, and Kassapa became the first patriarch of Buddhism. If you would like to meet Mahakassapa, he is still in this world. He is in southwestern China, sitting in samadhi in Chicken Foot Mountain in Yunnan. I think they call it Jizhu San, Yunnan province. When the future Maitreya Buddha appear in the world, he will give Maitreya the role which Shakyamuni Buddha gave him. So he is still in the world and he has not entered Nirvana. Those with sincere heart who travel to Jizhu San to bow to Mahakassapa forget to see him. Although I was there, Sanha said, although I said that Mahakassapa means drinking light, it does not mean that he literally drank up light with his mouth. Rather, it means the light given off by his body swallow up all the other lights. For example, if Mahakassapa went near a 500 watt lamp, his own light would be like that of 1000 or 2000 watt lamp, which would outshine the 500 watt light and make it appear dim by comparison. So drinking light is used figuratively. You shouldn't think that Kassapa drank light instead of water. Mahakassapa was the eldest or the oldest of the disciples of the Buddha, and the foremost of the Buddha's disciples that practices ascetic practices or asceticism. He was the oldest of the disciples, but the older he got, the more vigorous he became, the stronger he grew, and the harder he worked. He was the son of a rich Brahmin of the Magadha, and the king of Magadha had even bowed to him as his master. When he left the homeland, he thought, cultivators are called poor ones of the way. They had no business being rich, so he gave away all his wealth. He also thought, cultivator must endure bitterness, bearing wearism, and fear no suffering, whatever. So he concentrated on cultivating ascetic practices. Ascetic practice refers to undergoing suffering. That means not eating well, not wearing fine clothes, and not living in a comfortable dwelling. The harder something is to bear, the more the ascetic must bear. In all the ways, ordinary people wish to find enjoyment through eating, dwelling, and clothing. Ascetic wishes to undergo suffering. One day when the Buddha was speaking the Dhamma, he moved over and asked Kassapa to sit beside him. At that time, Kassapa was very old, perhaps 140 years old, the Buddha said. You are getting old, Kassapa. Your energy is failing. You should give up ascetic practice, eat better, wear better clothes, and move to a more comfortable dwelling. I don't know if you can bear up under such ascetic practice at your age. But Kassapa chose not to obey the Buddha. He continued his ascetic practice as before. Seeing this, the Buddha praised him highly, saying, the Buddha Dharma will dwell long in the world, largely because of Kassapa's cultivation of ascetic practices. His ability to practice means that the Buddha Dharma will certainly long endure. Thus, Patriarch Kassapa was foremost in ascetic practices. Once when the Buddha was about to speak the Dhamma, a god from the great Brahma realm or Brahma heaven make an offering to him of a golden flower and then lay down on the ground and ask the Buddha to use his body as chair and speak the Dhamma for living beings. The Buddha sat down on the Brahma god, took the flower in his fingers, and in the midst of millions of people and gods, gave a subtle smile. Kassapa also smiled slightly. And with that, the mind sealed Dhamma was transmitted. So it was a transmission of twirling the flower and giving a subtle smile. Then the Buddha said, I have the right Dhamma eye treasury, the wonderful mind of Nirvana, the actual mark, which is unmarked, transmitted outside the teaching, the sealing of the mind by means of the mind. I just transmitted it to Mahakassapa. In this way, Kassapa became the first Indian patriarch. As patriarch is a disciple to whom the entirety of the Buddha Dharma has been transmitted from the Buddha. Since the time of the Buddha, the Dharma has been transmitted to only one patriarch in each generation. Sakyamuni Buddha transmitted his entire Dharma to his disciple, Mahakassapa, and Arya Mahakassapa transmitted it to Arya Ananda, who became the second patriarch. From Arya Ananda, the Dhamma went to the third patriarch, Arya Sankavasa. From Arya Sankavasa, it went to the fourth patriarch, Arya Upagupta, and so on, to the 28th Indian patriarch, the great Master Bodhidharma, who took the Mysore Dharma to China, where it was transmitted to the second Chinese patriarch, the great Master Shen Kuang, or Hui Ke, and then on through the third, fourth, and the fifth, and the sixth patriarch. Then the flower of the Dharma bloomed with five petals, the five lineage of the Lin Qi, Fa Yuan, Cao Tong, Wei Yang, and Yu Men, and so forth, until the present, And now Buddha Dhamma has come to the West. This has been a brief summary of the transmission of Buddhism, the 12 ascetic practices. Sometimes they use the word Duttanga, or what they call ascetic practices. Means these are the practices promoted by Mahakasapa, because he specialized in this type of cultivation, asceticism. Means they believe in testing themselves, going through all the tough conditions to endure and to develop cultivation. In Thailand, they call it the Duttanga Monk, or the forest tradition, Duttanga Monk. And during the rains retreat, they will undertake Duttanga practices, or they never stay anywhere permanent. They keep on go to the walk. And wherever got suitable place or resting, they will stay there. Normally in the forest or the secondary forest, they will just put up the cloth and all those things, and they just stay all night. Then they plan their journey. And sometimes this Duttanga ascetic practices, the mission they undertake, can be very far. I used to hear from one of the famous Thai monk, Achan, what is his name right there? They call him, he smiled a lot on Achan Ganha, yes. It seems he's a nephew of Achan Chao. So this Achan Ganha, he liked to have this type of good mind. Is it Chai Di, Chai Sabai, Sabai? In Thai means good mind, comfortable mind. So he used to undertake this Tudong ascetic practices. And when he moved, he got a big follower, the disciple, or they follow him. And he walked for many, many hundreds of kilometers. Sometimes from north to south of Thailand. Then after that, they continue down to Malaysia. That's why he came here a few times. And I met up with him, and we made offering too. I have some affinity with him. I brought my mother to see him too and pay the respect. His metta is very good. Okay, we go on to see what are these 12 ascetic practices. Ascetic practice, they use the word Duttangas. Duttangas is the Pali name for the root tu, which means to shake out. To shake out means to strike out your spirit and raise up your energy. When you have a Zen meditation session, we are also encouraged to strike up our spirit, to be vigorous, and to fear no suffering or difficulties. The harder it is, the more you should endure and resolve to do it. As old as Patriarch Kasapa was, he still kept up his Duttanga or ascetic practices. There are 12 ascetic practices. The first one is the famous one, wearing only ragged robes. What does it mean? Means you cannot use the new cloth that people offer to you. You must go and collect those discarded robes after people die, or somebody discard the torn and very heavy type of robe. They call it like rags. You use to clean things or rag cloth and all that. So they will collect this and they will stitch them, sew them into the rope. And Mahakasapa always used that So it seems there was an incident, if I'm not wrong. I think I heard from Reverend Swana under one of the Jataka stories. When Mahakasapa met Sakyamuni Buddha, after he take refuge and pay respect, Sakyamuni Buddha wanted to offer him the robe. I think Mahakasapa received the robe and he offered it back to Sakyamuni Buddha because he said, I don't use this type of robe. I rather use the rag robe that I make myself. So that was the story. So wearing rag robe. The first deal with clothing. What kind of clothing does an ascetic wear? Rag robe, robe with hundreds of patches. One finds old unwanted clothing on refuge ship, wash it and stitch it into a robe. What are the advantages of wearing such a robe, you may ask? If you wish to know the advantages, there are many. If you want to talk about the disadvantages, there are also many. Wearing rag robe, you do not become greedy for fine robe and become vain, as often happens when one puts on the new garment. It helps do away with one's own pride or greed, and it also helps to loosen the greed of others. When people see you, they think that old cultivator is dressed in rag, not fine clothes. He is a true adept and I should imitate him. By means of your example, other bhikkhus also resolve to cultivate the way. So there are many advantages to the practice. Here is another advantage. By wearing rag robe, thieves leave you alone. For example, when I was living in Nanhua Monastery, this is by Xuanhua. One night a gang of thieves came to loot the monastery. They broke down the door and then demanded I hand over the money. I said, look at my robe. Do I look like I'm rich? I was wearing the same rag robe that I had worn in the Manchuria, while in Manchuria, when I sat to move for 3 years beside my mother's grave. When I had finished the term of mourning, I continued to wear it in memory of her. In Manchuria, where my disciples took refuge, each of them gave me an inside patch for my robe. It was really rag, but I had a lot of patches. Then I said, there are valuables in my room. Can get them. But when they took a look at me, dressed in rag, they decided I probably had nothing worth taking, and so they didn't go. Actually, there were two living treasures in this room at that time. One was Dharma Master Farming, and the other was Dharma Master Chuin from Hawaii. At that time, they were still young novices. Thus, when you wear rag robe, thieves keep their distance. The rich always stay away, and this saves a lot of trouble. Another important factor, woman leaves you alone. After you wore your rag robe for a while, it takes on a rare frame which women find offensive. One could never finish speaking of the advantages of wearing a rag robe. Number two, possessing only three robes, the three pieces. Cultivating this ascetic practice, one owns nothing except one's tree rope, it is said. When one owns nothing beyond the limits of one's person, vexation and annoyance do not arise. Bhikkhu who undertake the practice have only three ropes. The first is the sangati, the great or host rope. It is commonly made of 25 stripes of cloth. 25 strips of cloth. Each strip has 4 long and 4 short pieces. The patches represent field in which, through making offering, the faithful can plant causes for future blessings. This rope is worn when entering the king's palace, when taking the seat to speak Dhamma, and when begging for food. The second one is the Uttara Sangha, the robe worn when entering the assembly, made of seven pieces. It is worn by bhikkhu who attends sutra and dhamma lectures. The third one is Antaravasaka, and the all-purpose workrobe made of five pieces, which is worn in the monastery when doing manual work or labor, and in all ordinary situations. A bhikkhu who cultivates ascetic practices should only have three robes, his bowl or bath, and his bowing cloth. The first two ascetic practices deal with clothing. The next five deal with that most important human activity, eating, which is eating. Huh? Okay, I think we can stop here. Huh? We stop at page 171. Huh? So we are going to continue page 172. Huh? Then we will continue with our second session, which is meditation reporting.
For me, actually, we just moved into another phase of our life.
Yeah, so do.
It's like a lot of changes.
Very good.
For me, I didn't expect it to be like that.
Yeah.
I have some expectation for my retired life.
Yeah.
All this while I've been quite comfortable with the maid and all that.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't expect, I would say I didn't expect that, you know, I have to do all the housework, you know.
Yeah.
Like the housewife. It's really
a
big change, you know.
Yes.
I realized that initially I have what I would call some resistance to this kind of life.
Oh, okay, lifestyle.
I have some resistance, but after a while, I find it's not so. If you don't resist, you just accord flow. You don't resist. It's not that difficult, actually.
Yeah, can be done.
Yeah. It's not that difficult. And we have to, like, it's just like, you just do your duty.
Yeah, correct. Do your duty.
It's duty. Life is like duty.
Yes.
It's like duty. When it's time to cook, you cook. When it's time to eat, you eat. When it's
time
to sleep, you sleep. It's just, you are doing your duty. And
yeah.
Living life from, you know, we don't project so far away. So it becomes like much easier.
Yeah. When you do not create unnecessary thinking, analysis or sankhara, because when people do measurement, then the mind starts to develop like and dislike. Then it starts to complain. Why should I be doing all this housework again? Are you supposed to retire? I used to have maid and all those things. So when you do this type of comparison, analysis and measurement, then like you say, initially you feel you are not really happy to do because there is a resistance. But then after a while, when you understand Dhamma means doing your duty, and doing your duty can be very meaningful, because I remember in the early years or so, my wife used to tell me, because she as a teacher, she got to work, and teacher not easy like you, teacher not easy. Then after she retired, she realized she also still had to do the housework. Of course, initially, like your case, there are maids. And it helped. Then later on, the maid in between show got changes, and then you have to do yourself. Then look for another maid, then come. Then this one goes on for a while. But finally, he came to realize, actually, not necessary. That's why he reverted to part-time maid. Then after the pandemic, he part-time maid also, he reluctant to hire because he want to protect the family and all those things. So she tried her very best to do, but she came to know it's good exercise. You remember this will help you. When you do the housework, she is strong, the muscle, everything, then mobile. And it keeps you actually more healthy, fit. And at the same time, you do duty for your family, like you say, do your duty as a housewife or as a mother. And now your children no more around. It's the same. They are not staying with you. But if you continue to do this, you actually can develop clear understanding of what Dhamma is. The Dhamma is to understand the way things are. Everything is evolving, changing. Like Mahakasapa. As he aged, actually the Tutanga practice, the ascetic practice become more and more difficult. But you keep up with that type of movement exercise, then you find that you can continue for a longer time. Then it improves your health. It can train you in mindfulness and all those things. Then it can develop a lot of wholesomeness, a lot of parami. But you must also think of the good things that happen. Yeah, last time you need the maid is because your father-in-law is still around. You still need to look after him. Then your kids, sometimes they are with you at that time before they go overseas to study. So during that time, it requires to have maid to help and is very useful. But as things change, now you and relative are reaching the retirement age and your house also have less people, then you can try to like develop the understanding to continue with whatever work that you are doing. But like we went through, you have a bigger house now. Your next neighbor house that you bought, you convert into a way place, you also have to look after it. So if you want to simplify things, maybe get temporary mates. That one will help. That is the other house. You can let him or her clean it up. And on your side, maybe you and Bratil, that one, simplify it. Do it when necessary and when there is a need. So these are various skillful means that can like be developed through Dhamma understanding, and you integrate it with your cultivation, developing patience, understanding to accord and flow, and to do with joy. So all these are possible. So what you have been through and share with us is also very good. So these are phases that each and every one of us will go through. Apart from aging, we are going through the aging phase too. And of course, hopefully with some good blessing, our health are still strong and still good. So we face less of this sickness and disease and karmic attraction that comes from negativity or karma. Like recently, the flood, we are not affected. So it's indeed a blessing. Then the pandemic, so far so good, we did relatively well. And we have our finances taken care of. And for your case, as a government servant, retired, you have your pension, and relatively very successful. So no problem. So all these are our blessings. We don't have to like worry about without job after we retire. Worry about how to sustain our life, to survive to old age. to our retirement, because a lot of people face financial problem, health problem, and also karmic situation that can actually be very traumatic, especially the recent flood and all those things. Then there are others, first number two reality that can hit. So as Dharma practitioner, we have the understanding and we live our life in accordance. That's why most of us, Kayamita, we are really blessed. You look back. That's why you will have this joy. So all this good understanding. So hopefully it can add on to what you are doing, Dharma Sri, so that you can expand on it and develop better understanding of how to apply Dhamma to actually fit into your next phase of what they call retirement phase. Then when you can do that, you develop beautiful wholesomeness and merits. Because doing duty is very wholesome, very meritorious. Then developing Dhamma understanding to integrate your cultivation with what you are doing in your daily life, and having your religious routine, everything, doing your other duties. Like recently, you helped this Fa Zhang Sifu of our Cameron Highland Triple Gem Temple to allow people to have the condition to contribute and donate towards the Puja chanting, New Year Puja chanting, the very special auspicious chanting and occasion. First day of Chinese New Year until the 9 day or 10 day, I forgot already. So these are very auspicious activity, and you have done it well. And I saw a lot of people actually developing the joy and take the opportunity to contribute. I saw the letters and at least 120 plus already. So we like to rejoice in all this wholesomeness, and thank you for organizing this. Sadhu. And at the same time, it's a very good way of helping this Sampo temple, because I think with the pandemic, they don't have much activity and they need funding. Now, normally, their funding come from retreats and all those things. But the last 2 years, there has been no retreat. And a lot of activity, they cannot organize. So they lie low. So they need funding. So in whatever manner we can, we try to help. And we try to, like whenever there is a need, to get people to raise some whatever small amount of fund also, at least it will help. Because as more and more people contribute, then it will snowball into something that is useful and sufficient for them. That's why Fa Zhang Sifu and all the worker and staff and monks and nuns there, I think they know our group very well now, okay, Mitra group. And they really have joy and like us. So once again, sadhu to you, Dharma Sri. You want to say something about this?
Yes, actually, this thing arise, it was one evening.
Yeah.
I got a phone call from one of the monks.
Yeah.
In the Sampo temple. So I phone, and then it was actually Fa Zhang Sifu borrow the phone of the other monk to to get me to invite all Kayanamitas to
partake in this
3,000 Buddha Puja.
Wow, sadhu. Yeah, the 3,000.
From the first day of Chinese New Year until the 9th day.
Yeah.
So together 3,000 bows. So within that 9 days.
Yeah.
3,000 times to the 3,000. So is to make aspiration to wish the world
world peace and also the country well-being yeah. and happiness.
This is my second or third time doing all this. From doing this, I learned a lot of things also.
Yes.
I learned a lot of things. I realized that this time my mind doesn't stir so much.
Yeah, not like previously.
There are so many of us. And yeah. Everyone has their own way to express, to put in their contribution.
Yes.
They were
develop the joy.
Very shy. They wanted to take part, but maybe because of certain constraint, they can contribute little, so they were very shy.
But no problem. Whatever amount, even 5 ringgit.
Yes. And some they just bank in the money without telling me, so I have to
sort out all the things.
So after a few rounds, I trace back their phone number. I call them. Are you the one banking?
Yeah.
Until today, everything goes on very smoothly. I would say.
I realize you are able to do it so well. That's why a few days back, I told my wife, my daughter, I said, you look at how Pamasri organized it. He got no problem. He can tally all the money that come in alone.
Yes. And then today, there's one friend, one Kayamimita from Canada. She.
Sister Yun Chan's friend, Emily, is
sister
it?
Sister Emily, yes.
Yes.
She bring in the money and the money doesn't clear.
Oh, it's okay.
Her name wasn't in, so she texted me. I put her in. I know the money definitely.
No problem. It will come through because she went in without telling me.
So that it was like, you know, we are a bit patient and then we wait for a while.
Correct. No problem.
Things will just unfold and everything will fall into place.
Correct. You need to contact her. You contact Yun Chan. They are very close. Yun Chan visited her in Canada, I think, about a year or plus ago. I supposed to go with her and Raymond on the same trip, but something else cropped up. Then finally, we decide not to go to Canada. Yes, at that time, we haven't been there, but we just don't have the condition. I remember her name, that's why I can recall. And she came and visited me when she was in Malaysia. Yun Chan took her over here. She was looking for Dhamma, like you all. Searching for the true Dhamma, not easy to find. Then she was full of joy. She collected a lot of the transcript book, the Chanting book, and the Heart Sutra, and all those things. So this one has kept her with the training and the faith and the understanding. That's why, because of that, Sister Yun Chan put her on the Maikayamita listing. That's why she know about our activity too. And every time she is here, she will make it her point to come and pay respect and visit me with Yun Chan, of course. So Sadhu, very good.
No problem. Everything goes on very smoothly.
Yeah, I can sense too. That's why I rejoice.
So actually, I was quite shocked when I got this phone call from
Fa-chan Sufu. Yes. Unless it's urgent, he will not call.
Yes, he will not call.
Yeah. That's why he sends the urgency. That's why
I sense it. So
go ahead and raise the fund. Kayamita will donate and make the offering. Then Kayamita fund also will make offering. So that's how it all happened. And it's very wholesome. It's really auspicious and a great field of merit for a lot of Kayamitas. Yeah, these are the things that you can do for the country's consciousness and for the planet, consciousness for our world, it leads to wholesomeness, world peace, well-being of humanity and all those things. And all this chanting, bowing, and even reciting of all this for the nine auspicious New Year is very meaningful, very meaningful. And they do it as a Mahayana practice. That's why it's very wholesome. At the same time, they can also raise some fun while allowing people to have what they call opportunity to partake in this type of wholesomeness. Mm. So sadhu to you and all those who have contributed. Rejoice, really rejoice.
I just put in, I feel that I just put in a bit, not to say that I'm doing a lot, but it's just a bit of things that I feel when there is a need, I will come for, I will.
Yes, we are this one.
I really feel the need.
Yes, this one is very important because you created the process and condition for so many kayamitas to have the opportunity and condition to partake in this wholesomeness, which is very rare and very auspicious. That's why that is the joy you must have. And the understanding is you have the Dhamma understanding, that's why you're willing to help out and do this. And when you call me, the way you actually described to me, I knew. And my nature rejoiced, I straight away give you the approval and you just go ahead and do all this. And then most of the time, you don't have problem. Therefore, your side, like everything can be resolved. Amicably, you have the Dhamma, you have the understanding.
Very smooth, everything yes. Goes on very smooth.
Yeah,
very
yeah,
well.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. In fact, Joyce side also, they did very well because the flood relief thing, you get the youngster people, the young people, people like my daughter, Kokwai, Christy, and many of these Zen, and many of these helpers. Kayamitas who are able to actually help her to do all this. In fact, a lot of work they do, house to house interview, vetting, and then they assess, then they have to come out with the consensus to allocate and all those things and give aids. Then the work behind is a lot. My daughter also helped to call up because some of the volunteers, they are working, and my daughter is already retired. That's why she can have the time to help her. But the way Joyce actually planned it was the old school one, involved too much paperwork and all those things. So later on, hopefully, when the feedback comes in, she can actually improve and improve on all this, and maybe in future simplify things. And get it done with less, what they call, less problematic or more efficiently. Otherwise, this volunteer who have to work, and you go through the, what they call, inefficient way to do things, it take up too much of their time. And I was told, even by Joy, a lot of them work until 3 a.m. the other day in the morning. They hardly sleep, and the next day they up again, and tomorrow they have to go and distribute the money again. So a lot of these things not easy, but you have the Dhamma, you endure, you patiently do, it's beautiful. Even Suyan also help out in whatever way, and Suyan also try to do something for our kayamitas who are affected, but those affected our kayamitas are very few. Very few. Most of them are inclined, and just I think six of them or around the handful. So we have actually helped them. Like today, you saw Brother P. He replied and was very grateful to all the generous contribution he received. 2,000 from that Pan. So Sian has already dispersed to him. And there are others too. I have the list where Sian report to me and discuss with me what he do and how. If I see it's okay, then I will say go ahead. And most of the time, I will just tell him to go ahead. Unless I see something that I need to maybe give some good suggestion or simplified thing, then I will share with him and advise him on all this. So far, all the Kilometers who are helping me, they did a wonderful job. And I would like to take this opportunity to thank you all. Not only all this wholesome work, organizing retreat, even the spiritual trips, and all these talks, recording.
Don't mention. I is my. Actually, I learn a lot of things. Like this time, when I go through collection, like helping this time, I really feel very blessed and very lucky.
Yeah, full of joy.
Yes, full of joy that
because you are able blessed. To create conditions.
Kayana Mita, we are very, very blessed that we don't have, we receive Dharma from Brother Teo in, I would call a very conducive way that we don't have to go and look for funds to
correct.
And those monks and nuns who are practicing, they have to take care of so many things.
Yeah. That's why I set up the Kayamita Fund is for Kayamitas to do wholesomeness. And surprisingly, all these are volunteer ones, and people can see the benefit and they understand what we are doing. That's why the contribution just come in. Sometimes I don't even know how many people donate and donate to Sui An and Stephanie. But on their own, they send me the record and give me the update once a year, which is good enough. And I trust them because I handpicked them. And these are people who have integrity and has followed me very long. Sian since the university day, I know him. And the wife, Mifong, they were my uni mate. And Stephanie also with me since the early days. So these are people whom I can trust. That's why I leave it to them to manage that fund. And I split into two because Stephanie is mainly Tuesday class and Sian is mainly Thursday class. Then from the activity, people know because we have actually helped Kayanimitas to develop a lot of wholesomeness. You read the website, it's all written there and explained there. There are certain type of Dharma activity that we do, only Kayamita Fund can make offering, like the printing of Dharma books, or the writing material, the video thing, or maintenance and sustain another website, and subscription of whatever they call security, virus protection, and all this thing. So we have to keep abreast with technology too, and we are very grateful to all those who help out, like Brother Lau, Sian's ex-boss who help us to set up the website and maintain the website, the upkeeping and all things, and also Brother Chin Hao and the committee who help us do all this. So we really have a lot of gratefulness. I would like to really thank them. And this is what Kayamitas are for, creating a very conducive environment for Dhamma to flow. And you look at the Kayamita setup, there's a lot of harmony, there's a lot of joy, a lot of understanding, and the cultivation. The faith are very strong, and a lot of people have been telling me our Kayamitas are very different from other people. They can sense they are all very sincere, very genuine, and when they get to know them, they really have a lot of faith, trust and joy. So all this is what we meant by you live by the Dhamma will protect, and the Dhamma will actually create causes and conditions for you to manifest your understanding. And your virtue will shine forth. Your understanding will shine forth. That's how it makes the difference. Yeah. So all this, as you understand, your faith becomes stronger, and you really rejoice to be one of the Kayanamitas. Yeah. So very good. Yeah. Thomas Ray started to you. Yeah. So this
Roger, another thing I want to share is from one experience, you know, that I developed this actually about a week ago.
Huh.
Some rashes on my forehead.
Oh, okay.
So I thought it was a small matter. I just leave it.
Mm.
So later, I got a shock when I know what is it about. It was like shingles.
Oh, okay.
It's actually shingles.
Oh, okay.
So I went to see my nephew TCM. He gave me some Chinese medicine.
Yes, so yes.
Taking 2 days, he said it will be very sanfu.
Yeah. Said, very painful one.
Very painful.
Yeah.
And I said because the other day I didn't feel very serious. And I still went out with Radio. Radio, you remember? Like we still
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
After the lunch, when I came back, it was like the thing accelerate now.
Oh, okay, okay.
So after escalate, then this team got panic.
Oh, okay.
So he took off. He said, "Hey, cannot depend on TCM. You have to go see a specialist or something like that." So
yeah.
He to see a specialist. So since he already took off, I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Myself go.
I don't want to turn him down, because.
Yeah.
It was like
he was genuinely concerned.
He was genuinely concerned, and I don't want to upset him.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I said, just go, it's okay.
Yeah.
So the doctor confirmed it's shingles.
Oh.
She also told me, you need stronger painkiller or not? So he said, I give you this antibiotic, this, you take every 4 hours, and then you do this. So I said, yes, okay. So I took the medicine back. I accept. I just relax and accept it.
Yeah, it will help.
It helps. Actually, I didn't take the medicine at all.
Yeah, it will become bearable. Yeah.
It becomes bearable.
Yeah.
Some cream that he gave me.
Yeah.
And after that, after two days, I only one Panadol.
Oh, sadhu. Very good.
So today the scars already dry up and some of it dropped off already.
Oh, very good. It's healing.
Because the doctor told me it will take you 2 to 4 weeks.
Yeah. Sometimes shingle can be quite a while. But most people get it at the abdomen place. Yours is quite different. First time I heard is on the face.
So actually, my left side of my, the right side of my ear.
Oh, over that side.
And then the right side of my face also swollen.
Oh, but yeah.
After 2 days, the thing just subside. I accept. And I tell myself I will coexist with the virus.
Be with it.
Be with it. So it was like
when your mind state is good, your immune system will recover. Then you will become like bearable.
I was very happy that today the thing dries up and then the scar start the black thing, the dry.
Yeah, I know.
Falling off. So I'm okay.
Yeah, sadhu to you.
All doctors told me that, no, it'll be very painful. You want this or not? You want that or not?
Yeah, those who go through shingle is very painful. Very painful. And it's not easy to endure. Some people just unbearable.
Surprisingly, it doesn't go to the extent of
very
severe. And the thing is just like it escalate a bit and then it just turned down.
Yeah. Good. Sadhu. That's why you will go through aging, yes, disease. Then slowly you will witness more and more Dhamma. Then with the understanding, you are different now. You no longer panic like last time. Then also the experience you went through when your daughter in Shanghai has to go for that operation. So everything clear out. Now she's already out.
She's already out.
Living her active life.
Yeah. Thank you, Brother Teo and Mrs. Teo and all Kayamanita.
You should thank all Kayamanita.
All Kayamanitas for the metta sense.
The metta and the blessing.
She's very happy now.
Happy,
and then she's back to almost, I would say almost 90%.
Yeah, 90% back to normal. Yeah.
90% back to normal.
Yeah, and it's a blessing in disguise for her. As a doctor, she go through this, she will understand how patients have the mind state when they experience this type of disease or traumatic thing or going through operation and all those things. All these are very useful experience that she come to develop, and as a doctor later on she will do very well, because with the Dhamma understanding and the experience she go through, all this is going to make her a very good doctor. So rejoice, Sadhu.
Actually, thank you, Bratio, you remember not that day when to see you?
Yeah, you came in
Brazil. You told us to ask for forgiveness.
That was very important.
Yes. So I did that one day before her op.
Yeah, Sadhu.
I did that. Actually, I wanted to do it in the morning, but you know, these contractors keep coming in and going out.
You were renovating.
So I did it at night.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes.
No problem.
So I did it at night.
Yeah.
Actually, something happened.
Oh, Sadhu. Sometimes you can feel it. One, your nature can feel it.
I did it for my brother, my father-in-law, a few times, but not. I don't really feel that strong.
Yeah, you don't have that. What they call
a connection.
The kanying,
Like this time, I would like to share the experience.
Yeah, Sadhu.
Ate something. I recall, Bharatiya said, you know how to do it. He said, you know how to do it. So I recall this Reverend Mahinda told us, candles, you know. Yeah. So I bow. I do it in a Mahayana way.
So
chao chu er ye.
Yeah.
Yo wu si tan chen chi.
Yeah, Sadhu.
Because I do it on behalf of my daughter, I say, very sincere, and I can feel the mindfulness.
That one will be very effective. It will move heaven. They say, Tian Kan Tong.
And there were one moment. I have this thought. I say, even I have to shorten my life to save.
Yeah, that is what the mother will do. Yeah,
I'm willing to, and so that she is so young, she can have more time.
Sadhu.
No, that is it comes from the heart area.
Yeah, the mother's love.
Yes.
Just so like my mother, when she was going to, my father, when I was Form 1, he went to a major ulcer operation, actually life and death on that time, during the early 60s, middle 60s. Then my mother was like, couldn't think of any other thing, because we have 9 brothers and sisters, and everyone depend on my father, and my mother was like, no other way out. He prayed in front of Kuan Yin and say, even at the risk of shortening her life, she's willing to sacrifice and let him live. Oh, and she determined very strongly. Yeah. Then I remember I saw a weakness only. Then I also, deep inside, I tell myself, my father did so many things to help people as a Chinese ancestor. Then with our karma, I believe he will pull through. And really, he pulled through. And when he came out, that time, the operation was still in the 60s. You just imagine, it's like open heart, no? He has to open up the ribcage. And that one really, they say in Cantonese, chapter one. Actually, no way out really, because it was near Chinese New Year, no? Almost the eve. No? He had this ulcer, so painful until the blood, everything come out through the stool. Then he went to the doctor. The doctor said, I cannot help you. You must go to Penang Adventist Hospital. Then he gave a recommendation. Then my father went there. Luckily, the UK specialist, the head of the hospital, he was there. He did an x-ray. He told my father, you don't wait to come back and admit. You must admit now. Otherwise, God also cannot help you. He said. And my father knew, no choice. Then he just asked somebody to pass a message to us and tell us he will be going through the operation. And my mother go up there and look after him. And it was a 6 days operation. The operation went on successful. 6 days to recover. Then I think on the 7th day only, he made his way back to Alostar from Penang. Then he lie in the bed, and it took him almost a month to recover because of the stitches and all those things, the open heart, the ribcage all open up. So when your mind is strong, when you are determined and make this aspiration, it will have its effect within the major consciousness. Yeah. So when you did all this, you will know where as a mother, your thigh, your blood connection with your daughter, very strong. And it will be very powerful, even among brothers, sisters, siblings, spouse, it is very, very powerful. That's why you must invoke the mind, then aspire, determine. So all this can happen. Sadhu, well, you went through quite a bit.
That day I did it for Yi Chu Xiang is
free. Yeah. Half an hour.
So every time I bound. So yeah. After that, Radio, there's something happened.
Oh, something happened.
15 minutes after I stopped, my head part was spinning, you know.
Oh, okay.
After that, I have diarrhea, then I throw out all my food.
Oh, okay.
It was for about 45 minutes to 1 hour.
I can't lie down.
So, what actually, I cannot understand why is it.
You see, one of the possible reasons is because you were so sincere, and when you did all this, you helped your daughter to take the karmic, whatever suffering that you had to go through. That's why you experience the headache, the pain, then the throwing out, the vomiting and all those things. So it will create a condition for it to arise. Then after that, it will help your doctor. That's why you know it's not normal. That's why you can read the sign. You know that this thing is not normal. That's why when you came in birth, you all were worried because it's your daughter. And I can sense the fear, the worry. But I told you all, don't worry. Well, these are the reality of life and existence. First, number two, reality. We understand, then we do what we have to do. That's why I say you have to do the trainings. You already have the merits, the understanding. So on behalf of your daughter, I say you ask for forgiveness. Then you invoke power of merits for turnaround. So you don't have to go and start following advice of Buddha, cultivate, develop merits. All those you already have, you and Bertil, like I said, you all did so much thing for the Kayamitas and the Sasana, and organize so many of these wholesome spiritual trips and the Dharma activity. So all this has already created the causes and conditions for a lot of wholesomeness to manifest from you and Brother Tim. Then you are also very generous in many ways. So you invoke power of merits, it will bring forth many things. Then also you and Brother Tim has been very generous and invite my family and even my wife for dinner, lunch, and sometimes you make offering and also. So my nature invoke power of merits based on whatever wholesomeness that you have done unto my nature and help the Kayamita, the Tripitaka. So all this will have its effect. That's why it will all fall into place. That's why your daughter's case, the operation went on smoothly and everything turned around very fast. And there were a lot of joy. So these are the understanding that cultivator will develop as you go through life, and you will start to see more and more things happening. Then you can actually, from all this experience, this is what the this is what the Bodhisattva way is all about. Unless you go through yourself, unless you witness and see others, then later on when you come out to share, you can see a lot more. Like now, you only see whatever I share with you all, the Kayamitas and all those things, but you haven't personally met all these things. Yeah. But later on, when your nature become different, when you all start to come out and share, and you will experience a new experience or new dimension of experience that will enable your cultivation to become very different. That's why under the Wuyang I Ching, the sharing, the proclamation of Dhamma, and also the 10 great merits, you will understand all this. You have to expose yourself to that type of cultivation, the 10 merits, very extensive, and how to actually develop a wide enough understanding to teach the Dhamma, to share the Dhamma. It's not easy. Because it involves causes and conditions of all beings, all things, all conditions. Then it varies from civilization to civilization. And coming, everyone is different. All the conditions and causes are different. So you need to have this total understanding leading to perfection of virtue, wisdom, and understanding to enable your nature to be different, to teach and to share. So all these are very beautiful, and you all, some of you are starting to be exposed, starting to develop the understanding. So it's from here that you slowly develop the understanding, then your faith becomes different, then the joy also becomes different. Then as you see more and more Kayamita share, more and more Kayamita progress in various different ways, through all this group sharing, you will learn faster. Because from everybody's experience, you develop the richer experience that you can develop as compared to when you alone. There is a limit to what you can do alone. But when you interact with people, cultivate together, share understanding, then share experience, we learn very fast, we progress very fast, we become very different. Okay, Tomasri? So yes. Hopefully you understand.
Yes, Brother, after that incident, the next one, and during the off time, I was very calm.
Yeah.
I was very stable.
You all become very different already.
Become very different because it's like inside telling me everything will be okay.
Yeah, the signs are all there. In fact, before that, I already can sense the sign. That's why my nature rejoiced. Then when I sent out to the Kayamidas, in fact, initially I informed Sri An first, then after Sri An sent out, I add in something, then I rejoice. Then I can sense, during that time, I was also radiating, sending, then I can send. Then I know everything will be fine. Mm. So all this will manifest, and as cultivator of the way, like what you went through, you will have that gung-ho feeling because you already done all this that is required. That's why I say do what is required. Yeah. So when we do all this according to our understanding, the Dhamma way, then we become beautiful. Then nature will manifest and evolve accordingly. Yeah. That's why the Dhamma way is the best action, wisdom way. Mm. So all this understanding is truly beautiful. Mm.
Yeah, brother, this actually, this incident,
yeah,
I mean June's surgery, it leads me to the understanding of this Kaya Karana Metta Sutta.
Yeah.
The love that we need to have.
Yes.
Guarding the only child with his own.
Yes, 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 yes.
That is the experience that I go through. I feel, yeah, that this is,
that's
the
why you're
kind
willing
of
to sacrifice your lifespan. You're willing to do whatever because that is true love. It's nothing to do with selfishness. It's the willingness of a mother to sacrifice, to protect, to guide, and to help. And there is nothing behind, yeah, intent to do all this. It's just love.
And how difficult is it for us as cultivators to extend this kind of love?
Yeah, not easy. That's why when you take the vow, the first vow, we vow to liberate the limitless sentient beings that exist in this universe. And we vow to take them all across. That vow is out of love and compassion. Then you will have this heart that is so different. And wherever there is condition, you will do your part. But you will not like become rigid. You will not act out of emotion. No. You do your duty. Your vow will manifest. That it will create causes and conditions for you to understand. Then you just do your part. Do what you have to do. Then everything will fall into place. This is what Dhamma is, the Dhamma way, which is the wisdom way, the way of virtue and wisdom, perfection of virtue and wisdom. It will give rise to the wholesome condition for life to really become wonderful, meaningful. Good, sadhu.